Welcome to Crump Insights, exploring timely life insurance and retirement planning topics for today's forward-thinking financial professionals. In this episode, we'll cover obesity management advancements and what it means for obtaining life insurance. I'm Brian Bushlack, your host for this series and an active life and health insurance producer. Joining us, Emily Bancroft, MS, ALMI, AIRC, ACS, and an ALU certified professional underwriter who serves as senior underwriter at Crump Life Insurance Services. Emily, thanks for joining us. Obesity is obviously a problem across America. We've tried to solve it with diet and exercise. We have some new drugs now on the market. Maybe start by giving us kind of an overview of where we are from an underwriting standpoint.
Absolutely. As underwriters, we typically look at obesity, height and weight, and it was sort of cut and dry in the past. And while we're still looking at those things, we're looking at the whole picture and trying to look more in the totality of what somebody is doing versus just saying, hey, you're a certain weight and this is the way it's going to be. Many Americans are overweight, and you know that's in a BMI range of 25 to 29.9. And then obesity starts at a BMI of 30 or higher. And statistically speaking, about 40% of Americans do fall into the category of overweight or obese. And some statistics are even showing now that as little as 12% of U.S. adults are actually considered metabolically healthy at this point. So there is a very increased focus from insurance standpoints and just overall costs with medical care as a whole as to how we can get this under better control. So they're looking at things like genetic factors, as they definitely play a part in this, psychological factors, obviously lack of physical activity with a lot of stationary jobs and things of that matter. But we're looking at things too with the diet, like refined carbohydrates, all the refined foods that we're taking in, and even things like sleep play such an important part of what contributes to being overweight or obese. And then, of course, there are medical reasons aside from genetics, things like an endocrine disorder or polycystic ovarian syndrome. And a lot of those issues and just being overweight or obese in general comes down primarily to insulin resistance. And there are different things we can do to get insulin resistance under control. And that's where some of these new medications are really starting to get us a lot of traction.
Before we talk about those new medications, too, I want to kind of get the background here on obesity itself. You know, it's a chronic disease, and it's finally starting to be treated that way. I get the impression that doctors and healthcare systems are really investing here to try and keep people healthy before they get sick, which is good. But can you talk about the obesity bias amongst, you know, the general public and some doctors?
Yeah, absolutely. It's tough. You know, it's in the same vein as alcoholism. 20 years ago, people would just say, put down the bottle. Now we know that some people have a little bit more likelihood to abuse alcohol when somebody else will go have a drink and they'll be fine. Somebody else could just run with it, unfortunately, to the point of abuse. And it has a lot to do with just how our brains work. It goes along with dopamine pathways, and addiction and obesity are similar in that way because it tickles, so to speak, that part of your brain where the dopamine's at. And so when you're eating food, people that have problems with obesity, it's almost that rush that you get if you would drink alcohol and have alcoholism. And they're constantly trying to just get back to that feeling. And they don't necessarily know that that's what's going on. But when it comes to society as a whole, there is a lot of bias because people do just sort of look at it like, hey, put that sandwich down and go for a run. And there's a lot more to it than just that. And it's the same with the medical community. Some doctors have been trained in it and understand, hey, there is a lot more going on here. And some medical professionals are just very old school and are sticking to the, you should be able to do this on your own and you don't need help.
Yeah, well, we all have our weakness. I know
For some people, it's the sweets and the treats. For me, it's that charcuterie board. I have to tell myself, you know, take a step back and, you know, walk away or limit the portions, you know. So it's an interesting thing, too, that, you know, from an underwriting standpoint, how this is now being dealt with. Talk about that and, you know, being overweight and the consequences of it from not only an individual health standpoint, but also when it comes to insurance options and what that means.
Well, the normal complications of being obese, the big things we're looking at are people develop metabolic syndrome. There's cardiovascular disorders like coronary artery disease, high blood pressure, you know, the different vascular diseases. Obviously, things like type 2 diabetes is one that really comes to mind. High cholesterol, even cancers, people are more likely to get if they're overweight, things like colon cancer, breast and endometrial cancers, and even prostate cancer. We're also seeing kidney issues with chronic renal insufficiency, sleep apnea, arthritises. It really runs the gamut as just to how many things can be impacted medically, which, you know, when we're looking at the underwriting, this is the stuff we're looking at now. So you have somebody that's overweight or obese, and you start taking a deeper dive into what the risks associated with that individual's overall risk profile is. And you may start to uncover some of these things. And I think some of the challenges with that is when you have perhaps a younger obese person, you don't necessarily see some of these things that start to develop once you reach like middle or later ages. So the pricing, when we're looking at how they're going to be underwritten, tend to go up when you have somebody of a higher BMI, because we're trying to anticipate some of that mortality.
Yeah, that was my next question, was the impact that this has, you know, with higher premiums, maybe less favorable terms, what you can or cannot get when it comes to securing that life insurance policy. How much of an impact is it, though? I mean, are there some mitigating factors that you look at now where you can say, well, yeah, BMI is high, but this is good in this area or better in another area that maybe help offset that?
Yeah. So BMI itself is starting to kind of come under greater scrutiny. And I think we're years away from seeing any real changes there. But I think down the line, you are going to see some sort of better measure to kind of encompass what an individual situation is. For example, let's say you have a bodybuilder. Their BMI is going to be higher, but they have much more muscle mass than somebody who's not lifting weights and taking in a bunch of protein and watching their diet. So it's kind of hard to compare two people with the same BMI because their risk profiles could be completely different. So we're looking at things like activity. If we're seeing things in their medical records of they get their sleep every night, they're eating a healthy diet, they're exercising 5 days a week, maybe they're taking a statin medication that would help control their lipids and things to maybe cut down on a coronary artery disease concern, things of that nature. But those are the things that we try to look at to offset and help credit people into a better underwriting situation.
You know, that's an interesting point, too, with the new drugs that have entered the marketplace here to help fight obesity. From an underwriting standpoint, do you look at that and say, this is a good thing that they're on this drug and they're taking action? Or do you look at it through the other lens and say, oh, my goodness, they're on this drug. You know, this is not a good thing. How does that play out from an underwriting standpoint?
Yeah, so it's always with any medication, you're looking kind of like, is it more risky to be on the medication or not? If this person does nothing and they stay overweight, we know what the complications could be. Mm-hmm. If we see somebody who's taking their life by the reins and they're saying, I'm going to do everything I can to get as healthy as I possibly can, that tends to have a better outlook. So we're not necessarily seeing companies coming in and penalizing people for being on the medications. We do look to see how much weight they've lost within a 12-month period, and half of that would be added back on traditionally. Some companies will look to see that a weight is stable for 6 months to give you credit for a weight loss as well. If we see somebody taking the medication and making those steps and we're seeing success, that's definitely a pro versus somebody who's not doing anything and struggling.
Okay, that's good to know. And the new medications too. I mean, you've really got to stay on top of this too. And I think it depends on the situation. It sounds like how they're being applied. And there are other factors on top of that. If someone, you know, gets on a medication and loses weight, or there's a dramatic weight loss in a short period of time, you get some credit for that, but not all of it, right? I mean, there's some add back.
Yeah, definitely. Most companies, they'll look at the last year and they will add half of the weight back on that has been lost, because people tend to regain the weight. Some companies are leaning towards, let's see what weight has been stable for 6 months before we give them the advantage of having lost that weight. That's generally how they're looking at that.
And you know, the other thing too, that's really, when we talk about weight, oftentimes, you know, diabetes goes hand in hand with that. Can you tell us about the drug that's been used for a while now for diabetes management and give us kind of the underwriting history with that?
One of the big medications we're seeing now, you'll hear Ozempic, and the generic name of that is semaglutide. The FDA has approved that medication, semaglutide, for use in obesity, and that medication is called Wegovy. We also see generic name tirzepatide used in diabetics, and that is called Mounjaro, which has recently been approved for obesity, and that is called Zepbound. As far as the experience we have the most history on, and that's going to be the semaglutide, Ozempic, Wegovy medications. There's about a 20-year history of those medications being used solely in diabetics. And the main risk factors we're seeing, we'll see gallbladder disease. And truly, in anybody who loses a significant amount of weight in a fast manner, is at risk of having a gallbladder issue, like gallstones, or having to have their gallbladder removed. And we see that in bariatric patients too. That's actually just one of the risks that they, you know, kind of disclose when they're going through the process of being evaluated to have the surgery. Another big thing that you'll hear on television shows or the news today, people will talk about gastroparesis. And gastroparesis is really just a person's stomach, really. It's a delayed gastric emptying. And sometimes it gets to the point that it takes too long. And that's when we get into this zone of gastroparesis. And that is inherently a diabetic complication usually. And it's the nerve endings and things have been affected by damage from having high blood sugars. So we're seeing a lot of the gastroparesis commentary from the diabetics that have taken the medication. So we don't necessarily know if people taking it solely for obesity really experiencing those complications, but that's something that's being looked at. And then the other thing is if there is a history of different thyroid cancers, it's a rare one, it's medullary thyroid cancer. There's like neuroendocrine issues as well, but that's only been found in lab animals at this point and not in humans. But those are some of the things that they're keeping an eye on. But what we are looking at when we see people taking these medications are, is it riskier for them to take the medication or not take the medication? So again, we're back to the, if this person's going to stay this high BMI, we can expect that they are going to develop things like diabetes or potentially cancer. If they lose a large amount of weight, a lot of these complications go away. And one of the other things I guess I do really want to mention is these medications are being looked at as something used for the chronic treatment of obesity. And that even if you lose a bunch of weight, it's kind of like having hypertension and taking medication for that. It comes under control. But when you stop taking the medication, if you were to do that, your blood pressure would go up again because you do have a disease. So the thought process at this point is to be treating these medications as a chronic medication like you would for a hypertension, so as to continue allowing the body to not have the cravings and the different things that it was having that led to the weight gain in the first place.
Yeah, that's really helpful information. I want to wrap this up by talking about the partnership with Crump, because for producers now, there's so much out there that's changing on a almost a daily basis in terms of underwriting, what to watch out for. You know, you do as much field underwriting as you can, but oftentimes clients don't share information, right? And so we're sometimes, you know, submitting a case here and, oh, there's that surprise, right? So walk us and talk us through the process here and how you can help to manage that case.
Yeah. As with anything, as you mentioned, field underwriting, if you are able to do that and build that out, you know, you find out your client's taking, we'll say a semaglutide or a tirzepatide medication, trying to figure out if it is diabetes or if it is for weight loss. And while I'm saying that, there are some other reasons people are taking these medications now. They found that in diabetics with known coronary artery disease, that if you take these medications, there's actually a pretty significant reduction in adverse outcomes. It's actually a 20% lower risk of cardiac events versus just taking a placebo. And historically, Medicare wouldn't even cover these kind of medications because they were considered solely weight loss. But now if the FDA has said, hey, this is also going to be good to help reduce cardiovascular events, now Medicare is actually going to be allowed. You can under, I think it's Section D of the Medicare, you can actually start seeing these medications prescribed to help those people avoid cardiac events. So that's sort of an exciting development, but something else for agents to just know. These medications are coming up with different avenues for treatment, and anything you can find out from your clients to help us help you find the best home is always the best. But if we do get into underwriting and this medication pops up and we don't know why it's being taken, we can always work with you to just find the best outcome and ask those questions to you. What is your client doing? Are they just taking this medication, or are they taking this medication and they're really physically active? They changed their diet, because that allows us to have a conversation with the carrier partners we have to find you the best outcomes.
Well, great advice, because this is something that impacts a majority of our clients, unfortunately, these days. So, Emily, we appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much.
Crump Insights is brought to you by Crump Life Insurance Services, LLC, a leading third-party distributor and service provider of insurance and retirement products. Part of Truist Insurance Holdings, LLC, the fifth largest insurance broker in the United States. Crump supports the distribution of life insurance, annuities, long-term care, linked benefits, disability, and health products with the industry's premier sales and back office support and technology services. Marketing under the following brands: Crump, Truist Life Insurance Services, Risk Rider, and TELUS. Source: Business Insurance Magazine, using 2022 brokerage revenue generated, 2023 issue. For financial professional use only. Products and programs offered through Crump are not approved for use in all states. Not all applicants will qualify for coverage. Policy terms, conditions, and limitations will apply. Crump does not provide any tax or legal advice. Insurance products are available through Crump Life Insurance Services, LLC. Arkansas License 10010347. Variable insurance material is for broker-dealer or registered representative use only. Copyright 2024. Crump Life Insurance Services.